You guys know your jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm not introducing you. You're introducing yourselves.
Okay.
It's a whole new world. Welcome to Still Counting. I'm Galen Druk.
I'm Claire Malone.
And I'm Nate Silver.
We are back, as folks may know by now. Nate, Claire, and I are getting back together to start a sequel, if you will. Start a new show. Before we get to our official episode, first episode, which is launching Wednesday.
It's like episode, okay, this is like episode 0.5.
It's the introduction to our
book. It's a mini-sode, as our friends at Crooked have been calling it, yes. Which is a new term for me, which I like.
Yeah.
Our first episode, dear listener, launches on Wednesday, September 9th. So mark it down on your calendars. Subscribe, smash that subscribe button on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever you listen to podcasts, you get the drill. But before we sort of dive in with the midterms and Trump and like the parties and everything that is going to take up a lot of our time for the coming, I was going to say two years, three, whatever it may be, for the rest
the
of
the long
lives.
Campaign.
We wanted to turn the mics on, warm up, talk about a little about where we've been, mm-hmm. what we're doing with the show, how we ended up here, answer some burning listener questions, and also play.
Do we even have listeners yet? How can the listeners have questions if we have no listeners at
hey,
this point?
Hey, I mean, aspirational.
Write
listeners.
Us some questions. Yeah. I don't have an email address for you yet.
I mean, the folks on social media drop some questions.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah, that's.
I mean,
way
mostly
to
people were very enthusiastic, which we were so excited to hear, right? Like,
apparently Sarah Jessica Parker retweeted us, which was
the only thing I care about.
An
we can shut
rumor.
The podcast
back rumor. I actually haven't seen it.
Not if she has Twitter.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what we've been up to for the past. So, Claire, we haven't sat down for an official podcast since right before January 6th, 2021.
Well, you know what? I went back and looked this morning. I departed 538. In December of 2020. So in my memory, I thought that I was still employed by 5. Am I allowed to say 5:30?
Yeah, it's a joke.
They just bleep it out.
Yes, please bleep it out. No, so I think my last podcast episode with you guys must have been December 2020. So yeah. The election had happened. But I do, I have very vivid memories of watching January 6th happen at like the same desk and on the same computer where I recorded all the podcasts. So I smushed it all together. But like, yes, we haven't been together in this form in 5 years.
The last time we were, I guess, together in person, we did not know what the world had in store for the country, us, the parties, whatnot. First, let's talk about where we've been since December 2020. Then we'll talk about where the country's been since December 2020. So Claire, why don't you pick us off?
Okay. Wow. So so much actually. I freelanced for a while. I made a podcast about Hollywood and pop culture for The Ringer, which was actually super fun. I had sort of like my rumspringa year of like not doing as much about politics, which was really fun. And
wrote a cover story for New York Magazine about Andrew Yang.
Yeah, that was fun. And then I kind of got like my dream job, which I still have. I am a writer at The New Yorker. I cover media and politics, and I'm currently on leave from that job, writing a book about the MAHA movement and Bobby Kennedy and which I'm really excited about. So I'm kind of on leave for a year and doing that book and reporting for it and writing it. And so, yeah, that's my kind of like quick.
So tell me, Claire, what's up with all these beef tallow chips? Are they going to make me live forever?
Well, Galen, a lot of people think it's a cleaner, cleaner fat, a cleaner oil, right? That's a whole, you know.
I'm excited for this book to come out and be able to ask
we'll
you all of my quirky
all of
health
your,
questions.
Yeah, seed oils. Seed oils.
Whole milk.
I mean,
unpasteurized milk.
Raw milk, yeah.
What have you been up to?
So they culled the herd at ABC 538 one at a time, right?
We're going Claire in order, actually.
We are going in order. First man down.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I started a Substack newsletter called Silver Bulletin. I took about 2 seconds to come up with that name. Thank you very much. But it's kind of stuck now. And it's kind of my dream job in some ways, right? I'm my own boss. I actually have incentive to work hard. Don't get me wrong. I work my ass off for
you
ABC
do,
News
you
for
do,
most
you
of
do
it.
Work hard.
For most of it. Important caveat there.
for the first like 8.5 years, the contract, until they totally fucked around at the end. But no, the newsletter is great. We've been able to build or rebuild most of the models that we had. We have a team of four, counting me right now. And now I have this show with you guys that I'm very excited about.
We're very excited to have it with you.
Yeah.
So I left 538/ABC last, which would have been March of 2025. I'll be honest, it felt like, if we're really like pulling back the curtain, it felt for a while like I was recording a podcast on the deck of a sinking ship. Like all of my like main sort of friends on the ship had gone overboard and I was just still there, you know, every day turning up the mic and whatnot. But anyway, so 538 went down early March of 2025. I started a new podcast called GD Politics, which is a play on, yes, both my initials, but also goddamn politics. I think the way that many people feel about politics these days. Started it on St. Patrick's Day in honor of one of my best friends, one of my best Irish Catholic friends.
Thank you. Claire and Malone. My parents' anniversary.
Aw.
Yeah.
So yeah, we kind of got the podcast up and running 2 weeks after 538 went down. And I'm still talking with folks who used to work at 538, like Nathaniel Rakich, Mary Radcliffe. I'm talking to pollsters and all different authors, some politicians. We made news with Lisa Murkowski. She told me would consider becoming an independent under the right circumstances.
The podcast is great. There's so many, I mean, and also just like a shout out to all the 538 expats who are now like scattered to the winds, but are all doing such
We've secretly
things.
Infiltrated all of media
it's
to great, I mean, make data journalism present everywhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I have been doing that for the past year and a half now, and it's been a lot of, it's on Substack. So I've been working with Nate over on Substack, which has been a lot of fun, and it's kind of my dream job too. You know, I get to have a lot of fun conversations with many different smart people, and now I get to have, which I'm going to continue doing that, by the way, that other podcast, but now I'm going to have more fun conversations with more people I love right here every Wednesday.
We should say why we're doing this show. I think when we first started talking about it, it was basically just like, we want to do what we used to do. We want to have a smart conversation and we don't want to change it that much. And in some ways that's, you know, we talked to a lot of different people. In some ways that's why we ended up at Crooked, because I think they had listened to the old show and kind of knew what we did and liked it. And we didn't really want to, you know, curb our analysis or sort of maybe strong opinions or things that came across on the show. We just wanted to make our show. And that's kind of why we've ended up here. You know, we're all journalists in one form or another. And that's what we're going to do on this show. We're going to be journalists. We're going to have our analysis. And I don't know. I'm excited we landed here.
Although it is nice to work with a team, right?
Yes,
instead of
totally.
Having everything,
very much so.
Everything here. Because people say, why don't you just have put your shows in the Substack? And by the way, I'll still have video interviews on my Substack that aren't related to like this content necessarily. But yeah, I don't know. I've been experienced enough to be kind of an old media hand, and I just got good vibes that they were really interested and engaged.
A couple of things. One, I think to your point, Claire, Crooked basically said, we want to support you in making the podcast you want to make. And that was really exciting.
And we asked a lot of questions.
We asked a lot of questions. And one of them was like, of course, Crooked is a progressive, democratically aligned media company. And we are not a democratically aligned podcast. Just to make that crystal clear, we never were. We still aren't. And we won't be.
Right.
You know, we have opinions and analysis that sometimes the left likes and sometimes the right likes. And people can make their own conclusions about what sort of biases and opinions we may be secretly hiding, or we may say up front.
Remember when
even.
People thought we were getting married?
I mean, all kinds of fan fiction based on both politics and our personal lives. But to be clear, Crooked said, we don't mind that you're not Democrats, that you're not progressives, that you are journalists and analysts first, and we want to support you in doing that. And we said, fantastic, because that's what we want to do. And that's what we're going to keep doing here, which is trying to reflect the world as it is and analyze it that way instead of telling people either what to think or the way that the world should be or whatever. Which, Claire, you mentioned that we want to do what we did back in the early days of 538 or the earlier days of 538, which is true. But as we've all mentioned here, we've changed. We've grown a lot in the past 5 years. And also, the environment in which we're in has changed. Yes. Media and vertical video, and all that we've taken now our fourth pivot to video in the past decade. But numbers have changed, right? Like, we used to joke about the Scottish teens and predict it on the 538 podcast. But now it's not like a niche thing anymore. Polymarket and Kalshi are out front. All of these media organizations are doing collaborations with them. There's, you know, the polls are coming hot and heavy. There's the eternal conversation about whether the polls are getting worse or not, mm-hmm. how hard it is to reach people. We've just had big polling misses in some primaries. We can debate how expected those kinds of polling misses should be. There are new polling upstarts, et cetera, et cetera. And so the media environment has changed. We've changed. But also the numbers environment, you know, hashtag still counting. The numbers environment has changed. And so I just want to hear a little bit how we're going to approach maybe this new environment, or sort of why this work is more important than ever.
Some of these trends, like the interest in prediction markets, the interest in sports gambling, right? These are things that, like, I've always been interested in. And
the world has
about.
Caught up to Nate Silver.
Yeah, it's really just like we're kind of living in your weird little...
It is a little weird. It is a little weird where you walk into a sports arena, you walk into Madison Square Garden, they have the Kalshi or Polymarket concourse. I forget who sponsors what exactly. Like, that's a little weird. Certainly some notion. You hear this notion sometimes that, like, oh, people are just going to, we should just cover policy and civics. You know, nobody needs to look at polls. Like, yeah, fuck that. People actually want to anticipate what's going to happen given how important elections are. That's the most natural impulse and the most newsworthy impulse I can imagine.
And the people who cover policy well should keep doing it too.
Yes.
Absolutely. But elections, I mean, you know, have you noticed that there's almost no overlap now in the way that Democrats and Republicans vote in Congress? Among voters, it's a little bit more ambiguous, and I think the swing voters become more underrated than overrated. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, when you are deciding who wins an election, voting in an election, that everything is kind of baked in from there for at least the next 2 years, right? There's not a lot of, I mean, there, you know, obviously there are stumbles and policy misfires. If anything, though, the equilibrium we're in now is that because you have this rapid fire switch back and forth. By the way, it wouldn't surprise me if a Democrat wins the presidency in 2028, and then they're also a one-term president. You have this ping pong effect. But it's almost like because they know they're going to lose power quickly and become unpopular quickly, they therefore rush to do everything they can in the first 100 days and bear the consequences of that. And yeah, we're almost taking turns now instead of building durable majorities. I don't know how stable that is. But that's an important dynamic, and it means elections.
Yeah, we're in the middle of potentially trend shifting things during politics. I feel like when we first launched the podcast in 2016, we were always talking about the party decides, right? That was the current theory going on, mm-hmm. and I feel like over the past decade, oh my gosh, that we've been doing this, we're in this weird interregnum of there were sort of traditional American party politics, and now we're a little bit in this wild west, and I think that's interesting. Like, what are the trends of the next 10, 20, 30 years going to be? And I also think, you know, some of the stuff we're going to talk about on this podcast, AI, right? The sort of popularization of gambling culture, all of that stuff is going to play in some way politically.
Yeah, I mean, the 538 Politics podcast became popular during the 2016 election cycle, which was...
I didn't even know we were going to do a podcast. And on my second day of work, they were like, you're doing a podcast.
I mean, that was a real trip, that election cycle.
It really
but
was.
It set in motion a lot of the trends that we've now been talking about for the past decade.
Totally.
The reality is that Trump is going to leave office, and there are going to be likely new dynamics that set in, may start as soon as this fall, the midterms that we're going to be covering. But I think one of the things that made me most excited after doing basically a decade at 538 to still be doing this Civic Startup Politics podcast right back up again is that I do think we're in a period of change. Like, mm-hmm. the Democratic primary in 2028 is going to start in 4 months, and it's going to be absolutely fascinating. And to the point about these trends, I do wonder if at a certain point we become so polarized. The trends in education become so, they extend to their logical conclusion that something kind of breaks and something new is created. Back in 2016, we're always like, the system is very stable. It's a two-party system. Third-party candidates have no chance. Independents have no chance. You know, the American political system is the way it is. And you can oftentimes bet on that and be right. But at a certain point, trends reach their logical conclusion and something shifts. Either, you know, the populists and the two parties may see eye to eye and reshape. The more establishment parts of the two parties may see eye to eye and form common ground. There are different ways, you know, there are different ways right now that you can see things breaking open. We've never had more independence in American politics. Like, people are just really dissatisfied with the two parties, and there's, and the two parties, the coalitions within them don't make a ton of sense necessarily. And so I'm excited to cover something that will be, I think, dynamic, and hopefully dynamic in a positive way.
Yeah, the last really major shift in American politics that played out over, you know, anywhere from the 1970s through the early 2000s was the shift of Southern Democrats into conservative Southern Republicans, right? Yeah. And in some ways, the map, if you look at the map from 2000, Al Gore versus George Bush, a few states have changed, right? Georgia, Arizona, so forth, Ohio, Iowa, in the other direction.
It's a whole episode.
But it's still about 80% the same map. And yeah, I don't know. I think people might underrate the chance of a seismic shift. Of course, pundits have been talking about this for years. But like, two things. One is, you know, if AI is as transformative or half as transformative as a lab's claim it is, you're going to have great destabilization to the political system. We can debate if
data
the AI optimists are right.
Yeah.
Data centers are kind of the early canary in the coal mine for that, maybe, right? The other thing is, more and more, you know, look, I build models, and classically in models, we're trying to predict how do different demographics predict voting behavior, and the big ones are always race and religion, right? Increasingly, though, you see these really big divides with respect to age. On Gaza, for example, in New York here, with support for Zoran Mamdani, for example, or Abdul El-Sayed in Michigan, really, really sharp age splits. Not always as simple as young people are progressive. It's actually a little more complicated. But like, but when you see that, then you're almost guaranteed to have generational change coming.
Yeah.
You know, breaking news, old people die off, exit the electorate, right?
Use it a lot.
We all die.
Yeah.
On that topic.
Yes.
Death.
Mortality.
Yes.
So in classic form, we were like, let's do a little feed warmer. Let's turn the mics on. We've practically recorded an entire podcast episode now. But we wanted to, before we go, play a little game, because it has been a long time since we've all been together in a studio. And we were reflecting on that time when we were discussing in our editorial meeting, you know, what we want to talk about. And we're like, okay, let's try to settle on the most important number that defines the period that we were apart.
Mm.
So say, you know, January of 2021 to now August of 2026, what number either during that time is most significant to the political shifts or whatever themes that we've seen, or in this very moment, what number is the most significant? So, Claire.
Should I start?
Yeah.
I have two numbers. Maybe I misunderstood the directions. Can I do two numbers? I'm going to do two numbers. Or should I do one number?
Do one number. Then we'll come back around for
number,
runners up.
Give a number draft. There are a lot of numbers. This draft could go on for a long time.
Okay. All right. Fine. I'll start off with my very simple first number, which is two.
Wait. Hold on. Let's see if Nate can guess what two means.
The number of the Trump's second term? That he's a lame duck now?
The number of presidents we've had since we saw you.
No. I'll tell you.
Go ahead.
It's the number of wars that have started. I'm thinking of the war with
Ukraine.
Iran.
Okay.
Wait. Oh, no.
Ukraine
is my number one?
Oh, no.
Oh, this
number
is not
of wars
funny.
The U.S.
It's
is?
Not funny. I was thinking like the number of wars that were...
That like America started.
Oh, my gosh. My number is even wrong. Three. Okay, three.
Wait, which three?
I did this.
I feel like there's going to be...
I did this at like 5 a.m. this morning. Which,
wait, I don't even know which... Is it Venezuela?
No, Venezuela wasn't...
That was a little incursion.
It was a size excursion.
No, what did he keep on calling it?
Expedition?
He kept on calling it an exploit or an expedition. Anyway.
Okay, what are
the two? Oh my gosh, it's very embarrassing. Three wars. Oh boy. Ukraine.
We didn't start Ukraine.
No, I wouldn't. I'm not... This is just one...
Okay, go ahead.
Ukraine, Gaza,
yeah,
and Iran. And they've all had profound impacts on U.S. politics. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I forgot Ukraine. Wow. But Ukraine, I mean, Ukraine and Gaza have, in their own ways, I mean, I think Ukraine has reshaped Republicans in some ways more because it created, you know, I mean, J.D. Vance in some ways really kind of got a lot of sort of America First juice by being, you know, the guy who was saying some pretty outre things about the Ukrainians. The conflict in Gaza has obviously reshaped the Democratic Party. And then the war in Iran has profoundly impacted American economy and obviously Trump's presidency. Three. My number is three.
No, but two of the three, though, because two of the three, maybe the reason you forgot about Ukraine is Ukraine has not had obvious downstream effects on American politics, right? You go to Europe or something, right? I was last summer in Tallinn, Estonia, briefly in Helsinki, Finland, and, mm-hmm. and there, I mean, they're right near Russia, right? There, it's much more pertinent. Here, it's not. The other two, though, for totally different reasons, you know, I'm not sure that Americans would care that much about Iran if there weren't the effect on gas prices and commodity prices, but that's literally the most visible thing that you see. And then, look, we could do, I'm sure we could have a whole series about public opinion on Israel and Palestine and Gaza and how that does and does not shape political developments and how that has reshaped the Democratic Party and whether our vantage point in New York is over-indexed or under-indexed on that. But like, but that's had profound effects on again, like I said, the split between younger and older voters in the Democratic Party too.
Okay, so Nate, what is your most important number of the past 5 years?
If Claire picked two, then I'll pick 2 trillion.
Hold on. Claire, okay. Can you guess what 2 trillion is?
Well, how much the national debt has grown? I don't know.
I'm not one of those debt people.
One of those debt people?
Maybe
it's probably grown
be.
By a lot more. 2 trillion. Ooh.
I'm struggling. I feel like it's going to be something like about data center.
Yeah, like I was going to say the market cap of all the AI companies together.
It's something.
It's the valuation that Anthropic is now trying to raise money at. I think they're trying to raise...
That's the most important number of the past 5 years.
It was a big fucking flashy number. I want a big number for our debut, for half debut show, right?
Our mini debut.
I'm someone who believes that a lot of politics is downstream ultimately from technology. That some of the relative stability you saw in the 1950s and post-war America, and this is a time when you had record low partisanship and Eisenhower had very high approval ratings. So before Watergate, before Newt Gingrich, still a lot happening with the Cold War and things like that. But that was the era of big major television networks and radio stations where there's a strong gatekeeper effect, where they have advertising-related incentives to be kind of highly nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. And that begins to change with the internet, right? Social media needs to be a category unto its own, I believe. And I think a lot of politics is downstream from that. And so, you know, again, compared probably to most politics listeners, I don't know what counts as being an optimist or a pessimist in AI these days, right? You know, I am more convinced about the transformative power of AI than the average politics observer, less convinced than the average Silicon Valley person working in a lab, engineer or something. But, you know, people are talking about mass displacement of tasks that humans used to do. Mm-hmm. Even the biggest optimists in Silicon Valley would probably say, in some way, shape, or form, AI is probably likely to concentrate power in the hands of fewer rather than more people. You know, at the same time, also in terms of how we communicate, I mean, people say in some ways having these three big models, Gemini and Claude and ChatGPT, are like, they're kind of like the big networks, right? They have actually, believe it or not, the quality of information you get from ChatGPT or Claude probably better than you get from Twitter.
Okay,
there's another conversation about what happened to Twitter.
So we're going to talk plenty about AI on this podcast. I think that was a good little preview.
Yeah.
You've one-upped Claire plenty. Claire chose 2. You chose 2 trillion. When we were talking in our editorial meeting, we're like, we're all going to choose inflation. And so I think we all went out of our ways not to choose inflation. I will just say here, for those who are following along, the total inflation that America has experienced since the last time we recorded a podcast together is about 28% over those 5 years. And to put that into context, 4.5% annually over those years. And to put that in context, you know, the same amount of time prior, so what, like 5.5 years or something like that, from July 2015 to January 2021, the country experienced 10% inflation, which is about 1.7% annually. So I think that we have seen inflation obviously, undoubtedly affect American politics, but basically turn populations against incumbents around the globe. And, you know, you talked a little bit about this already, Nate, but the fact of inflation is that you see it everywhere.
Yeah.
And you see it advertised to you on the side of the road, at gas stations, whatnot. And unlike unemployment, which does affect beyond just the people who are unemployed, because people start getting scared about losing their jobs, ultimately, like, really high unemployment in America is 10%, right? But 100% of Americans experience this
inflation.
I have
seen an $11 gallon of milk at a New York City grocery store.
And I mean, and I believe you. And the other thing that all of that inflation has wrought, right, it is upset politics here in America and abroad. It's also been particularly new because we hadn't experienced those kinds of inflation numbers for two decades. But one other thing that it's wrought is higher interest rates, which disproportionately affects young people who are in a time in their life when they want to be borrowing money to do big things, go to school, buy houses, buy cars. And it has sort of frozen a little bit of our economy, especially for younger people, in amber, in a way that I think has created a lot of frustration and anger.
And feeds populism, for sure.
I wanted to, I have a runner-up number because I thought somebody choose inflation. So Claire, go ahead with your runner-up number and then I'll go ahead with mine.
Do you have a runner-up? You have three. You told me you had three.
Nate, you only get to share one of your runners-up.
Oh, wait. Okay. My runner-up number is 20.
Okay.
You guys aren't going to guess, so I'll just say it. 20 is the percentage of U.S. adults who say that they regularly get their news on Instagram and TikTok. And that's up from the 2020 numbers by a lot. In 2020, only 11% of people said they got their news on Instagram, and only 3% of people said they got their news on TikTok.
This is so interesting. I have a related number.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I wanted to choose something that just reflected just the quick and radical changes that have taken place over the past 5 years when it comes to the media landscape, when it comes to how we're consuming things. I mean, as a writer, I am disturbed by how much people love video. Hi.
And as a podcaster who's now on video, I love it.
But I just think that you know, the politicization of social media spaces like Instagram and TikTok, which used to be, I don't know, what were we all doing on Instagram? Taking pictures of food. That is just, you know, it's shorter bursts. The information environment is changing. How you're probably watch this clip on Instagram, right? If you see us. And that, I think, has changed the way the depth of people's understanding of certain issues. It's fed polarization in lots of different ways, not just algorithmically, but also like when you're actually watching a clip of something, there's less time to get into the nuance of an issue. So I just think it's really changed Americans' brains.
And it is negative.
Yes.
That's what rises to the top of the feed.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Nate?
With the fifth pick in the 2026 still counting number draft, I select the number 8. Do you have any guesses what 8 represents?
The number of times we've said fuck on this podcast so far.
I take the over on that. Galen, 8 is the number of Democrats running for the U.S. House that have lost their attempts at renomination in the primary.
That's a good number.
That is a good number.
That number is typically something more like 2, except in redistricting years. It was kind of halfway redistricting year, but most of these are, you know, as the media narrative is more or less correct about, it's either more moderate Democrats listening to progressives, or sometimes just older, out of touch resistance 1.0 or pre-resistance era older Democrats who are being replaced by younger candidates. And that's something which is a relatively recent trend, right? In 2020, the party got its way. The party, you know, remember it was like Super Friends and like didn't Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, like Buttigieg, all didn't they all come to the same rally and they're like
endorse
Biden. Yeah. In 2024, the party, in a complicated way, got its way too. There was not really a vote in 2024.
Although you know, some people in the party didn't like the way it went down. Understood. Obama, famously.
Yeah. Anyway. No, and obviously a very contentious process, but like voters did not have a lot of say directly in who received the 2024 Democratic nomination. I don't know if you tie a particular moment to this. Obviously, being in New York, we think everything revolves around the city, and so Zoran's defeat of Andrew Cuomo when Zoran Mamdani started out polling at 1% and was a relatively obscure, you know, political figure until then, like that was a remarkable development, mm-hmm. I would say. But that's been a relatively recent change since the last time, since even before you were working, you know, even when you were still working for 538, it was, I think, less clear until last summer with Zoran that, oh, this is a real big phenomenon. Deal, a real shift.
Okay, so my final number is a little bit nerdy. I apologize. But if you've stuck around this long, maybe you're a true head and you'll appreciate this. My final number is 15 to 20%.
Okay.
And 15 to 20% is based on research that was done by Yana Krupnikov and John Barry Ryan. They wrote a book called The Other Divide, which I talked to them on the 538 Politics podcast way back in the day when they published this in 2022. And basically what they were saying was that the main divide in American politics is not left versus right. It's the people who pay close attention to politics mm-hmm. and are very engaged on a daily basis mm-hmm. versus the people who are not. And it is only 15 to 20% of Americans who are engaged on a regular basis in sort of consuming all of the news that comes out about what's happening in Washington and in elections, who are posting on social media. And it's about 15 to 20% of America. It's about 15% of Americans who donate to campaigns and 20% of Americans as of recently who show up in primaries. And so much of the way we understand politics and the conflict in politics is set by that 15 to 20%. And it shapes, and like the media goes, those are the people who are going to rallies. Those are the people who get interviewed, who get put on CNN, who get written up in the New York Times.
Those are also the people who purchase media, who purchase subscriptions, who are the readers.
And these are the people who are probably listening to this podcast. But our job is not just to reflect to our audience what they think or their own biases or stereotypes about the world. It's to look beyond that, and data helps us do that, and to tell the story of the other 80%, right? And that 80%, a lot of sort of what they don't like about politics is not necessarily that they like hate the left or they hate the right, but they hate the conflict that is driven by the 15 to 20% who are so involved in politics. And so I think a couple things. One, when you focus on that 80%, you get a much more diverse set of views. This is your like people who want a border wall and a public option.
Right. It's the heterodoxy of Americans. Which
people who support legal abortion and are skeptical of trans girls participating in girls' sports. Mm-hmm. And it once you open the aperture to the 100% of America, you get a world in which we agree on a lot of things. A world in which a lot of these stereotypes are not, you know, there was this great Washington Post poll years ago that was like, what do Democrats think of Republicans and what do Republicans think of Democrats? Democrats think that Republicans are all like millionaire fascists and Republicans think Democrats are all like genderqueer or sexuality queer socialists. And it's like, America is far more complicated than that. And the way that oftentimes politics gets defined is by, just keep this in mind, a small subset of Americans. And those are also the people who are deciding our elections. So in primaries at the very least. And so if you don't like this highly conflict-driven environment, you actually have to bring more people into the political process, more sort of heterodox and ultimately more quote-unquote normie people into the process. And I hope we can bring some normie people into the process on this podcast too.
Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Send this to your mom.
No, that's important because it used to be that like the media was more centrist than voters were, right? Meet the Press and Crossfire and all these things. The big three networks. Fox always challenged that paradigm a little bit, to be fair. And now it's kind of the opposite. Now the media, now, you know, if you look at Substack U.S. bestseller list, almost all of that has a pretty strong identifiable partisanly.
Not us, Nate. Not us.
Not us. We're pure as a driven. Don't get it twisted. Driven slush. But that's been a big change too, right? Where like the normies have, like, and by the way, sometimes you'll have, let's say, oh, this person is pro trans rights, but also pro Israel, and that doesn't make any sense. Well, actually, like, there's no reason why your stance on all these unrelated issues should be related necessarily, yeah. Right? People, this is what parties do. You take a country of 350 million people in a complex, multidimensional sphere of all the complex, interconnected issues in the world today, and you smoosh it down into a flat surface where there are only two political parties, right? That's what partisanship is. It makes people think they have to be aligned with one party's views on all these issues when that's actually fucking stupid. It's an important force for understanding how public opinion is shaped.
New listeners are really getting a flavor of the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I think
we're going to have a lot to talk about.
And that is the kind of content you can find every Wednesday starting September 9th at Still Counting. But in all seriousness, that's it for today. Thank you so much, Claire and Nate. This has been truly, I mean,
yeah,
I've had
a lot,
I've had more
here.
Fun in front of a microphone these past 45 minutes than I have in a long time.
Yes.
So I'm very excited for what's to come. As I mentioned, we will be back in your feeds for our first official episode, as if this wasn't really an episode, on Wednesday, September 9th, and every Wednesday after that, plus bonus content. You can listen to Still Counting wherever you get your podcasts. Go like, subscribe, comment, whatever. We're also on YouTube, so subscribe, comment, like there as well. Our pretty pictures, all the video, the lighting in the studio is fantastic. So if you want to see that, you got to go to YouTube, youtube.com/@StillCountingPodcast. Still Counting is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Saul Rubin. Our music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Our production team includes Reed Trillin, Johanna Case, and Ben Hefko. Production support from Matt DeGroat, Katie Long, and Adrian Hill. Our production staff is proudly unionized with Writers Guild of America East.